I'm really struck by, I have to connect to the last talk. That talk was about connecting the mind and body, and what I'm struck by, the background of who I am in part, is that I started out defending the right to choose abortion, and then I started getting all the cases where the anti-abortion arguments were being used to punish women who had no intention of ending their abortions and who, in fact, saw themselves as pro-life and against abortion, and I'll explain what some of those cases are. We also have come to the realization that, you know, 61% of women who go to have abortions are already mothers. 85% of all women by the age of 40 are mothers. So the idea that there's one group of women who have abortions and one group of women who have babies is completely disconnected from the reality of women's lives. They're all the same women. So whether you are against abortion or for abortion, or whether your focus is on ensuring child-friendly childbirth, and the ability of mothers to take care of their children, you're all representing the same women, just at different moments in their lives. And one of the frightening things is, if you're interested in looking at mind and body, what the recent anti-abortion decision in the Supreme Court did, what it was about upholding a federal ban on so-called partial birth abortions, and you can have a lot of feelings about that, but the legal principle that was established in that case is that a woman's physical and mental health don't count. What they said is, you can ban a kind of abortion except if it harms her physical health, and unless it threatens her life. And they said, for the first time in all of the abortion case history, that you do not have to legislate with the woman's physical or mental health in mind. And if you look at what's happening around the country, one of the main agendas of the anti-abortion movement is to take away any legal recognition of a woman's mental health factors. And again, you can be anti-abortion, but you have to understand that this is what the underlying legal stuff is. So let me, this is my organization. See, now the problem is I work on a Mac. Let me tell you that this talk is from from natural to medical to criminal. And very, very briefly, I'm going to touch on some reasons why, although pregnancy is not criminalized for all women, I'm terrified because the mechanisms are in place to permit the policing of all pregnancies, regardless of your intent. One of the ways they've done that is through passing Unborn Victims of Violence Act laws, so-called feticide laws. They're passed under the guise of protecting pregnant women from losing their pregnancies when they're beaten by their boyfriends, when they're hit by a drunk driver. What we see is, every time one of these laws pass, the people who are primarily prosecuted are pregnant women, usually with drug or alcohol problems. They're arrested on a theory of child abuse before the child is ever born, delivery of drugs to a minor. In Texas, they passed one of these laws. The Right to Life groups were so happy they finally got recognition of the value of fetal life. And the first response was, a local prosecutor in her district wrote to every physician and said, the statute that defines an individual human being who is alive, including an unborn child from fertilization, means that if you treat a pregnant woman who's using an illegal drug, you must turn her into me so I can arrest her for drug delivery to a minor, because now a minor includes the unborn child. And in a community where there isn't a drug treatment program for pregnant women within 100 miles, 45 women were prosecuted, thrown in jail, provided no services under a law that recognized fetal rights. We ultimately got the court to say that was wrong, but not until 45 women were jailed, humiliated, separated from their children, not given access to services. Let me see if I can get any other pictures up here. None of them are working. Okay. Another piece of what's happening is, you've got an anti-abortion, I would say, industry that for the last 30 years has equated abortion, the individual decisions that women make, with the Holocaust. That we are experiencing an abortion Holocaust. The Holocaust is genocide. It's like slavery. It's like those things. But if you think about it, certainly you can think abortion is wrong, but to suggest the individual decisions of women are the equivalent of government-enforced genocide, the same as a government deciding that these sets of people don't deserve to live, is the same as one woman's decision about her life, is dehumanizing to pregnant women. Abortion, the hidden Holocaust. Again, I don't have any of my pictures. Now, is this what we really think? Because, again, the women who have abortions are pregnant women. Do we think they're the same as Hitler? Do we think they're the same as the Nazi SS? Do we think they're the same as slaveholders? Do we think they're the same as the people who committed the genocide of Indians in America? Are they murderers? Are they killers if they can't guarantee the outcome of their pregnancies? And are they there just for convenience? Because that's the other way we dehumanize. They're just waiting to get, you know, they want to fit into their prom dress, or they don't give a damn about their babies. Let me see if I can get... The other way that these things are getting put into place is through the war on drugs, by creating the idea that what a pregnant woman does to her own body can instantly and automatically cause damage has been also... You have the anti-abortion movement, you have the war on drugs, you have the feticide laws. You had in the 1990s cover stories like this, their mothers use drugs and now it's the children who suffer. Then presumably you have the inside, can innocent legacies of drug use be rescued? If you have innocent, you also have to have what? Guilty. Who's guilty? The pregnant woman. And by the time you get to the, now the kid is in school age, and as you might have noticed, the skin color gets darker as the face gets more menacing. These kids are going to be in school with your kids, and they're all damaged, and they're all bad. Front page New York Times, born on crack and coping with kindergarten. The teacher says, I can't say for sure any of these kids were exposed to cocaine, but I've never seen them functioning at such low levels. What I didn't bring you but is available on our website and joined together is the fact that every leading researcher on the subject of prenatal exposure to cocaine and prenatal exposure to meth says, of course, these are not good substances to use. But are they like alcohol, as bad as alcohol? No. Are they like thalidomide that permanently, predictably cause damage? No. These are drugs that, is there such a thing as a crack baby? No, meaning, yes, they're exposed, but is there a predictable syndrome of harm? No. All of those ideologies, though, were used to just start justifying the arrest of pregnant women. The first case I worked on, the allegation was that she criminally failed to provide support to her child. They claimed that she used an illegal drug. Really, this is the bottom of the slippery slope. She didn't get to the hospital quickly enough on the day of delivery. She had had intercourse with her husband on the day of delivery, started hemorrhaging, the baby was born alive and died, and she was arrested. Kimberly Hardy knew she had a drug problem, tried to get help, was told, left the state of Michigan to get away from her drug-using friends, moved back to Mississippi, whereupon she lost her prenatal care benefits, eventually moved back to Michigan, gave birth to a healthy baby, but hadn't been able to maintain her abstinence and was charged with delivery of drugs to a minor. Britta Smith in Virginia knew she had a problem, called every program. They either said, we won't take you or you'll be on a waiting list because you're on Medicaid. She was charged with child abuse based on the fact that she continued her pregnancy to term in spite of a drug problem. Melissa Crawley also gave birth to a healthy child. She had a more compassionate judge who put her on probation in South Carolina before the laws were decided. And when she was in a domestic violence situation and called the police, as is often true for women of color, the cops arrested both the abuser and her. This was a probation violation, so she goes back to jail as a child abuser in spite of the fact that her children are healthy, she's employed, she's abstinent, and she's doing a terrific job raising her kids. Catherine Barnett gives birth in Indiana. The baby dies. She's charged with homicide. She's really from Ohio. She can't get out of jail, even during the pendency of her case, because the only program that's set up around pregnancy and women says you have to have your infant with you, but since hers died, she doesn't have her infant, and she sits in jail until we get the court to say, no, homicide is not intended to apply to women who suffer pregnancy losses. This is Taishio Awahi from Hawaii. She gives birth to a child. A SIDS situation, but there's positive meth tox. There is no scientific association between meth and pregnancy loss. She's charged with manslaughter. Goes all the way to the state Hawaii Supreme Court. She wins. But again, this notion of the acceptability of the idea of viewing pregnancy as a crime is growing so much so that even though not a single state, not even South Carolina, has made it a crime to continue your pregnancy to term in spite of a drug problem, hundreds of women are being arrested. If they have a good lawyer, they get off. if most of them are told to plead guilty and they are literally serving hundreds of years of jail time. Regina McKnight, South Carolina, by judicial activism, declared that pregnancy loss can be treated as a homicide. Any risk of harm to your child, it is not a drug statute. These are not limited to illegal drugs. It says any risk of harm is child abuse. I got a call. There was a woman who'd been in labor for 30 hours. They wanted me to send them a copy of the decision so they could use it to force the woman to have a C-section, because by not having a C-section, she was risking harm to her fetus and could be viewed as a criminal child abuser. Crystal Ferguson and a group of women challenged policy at MUSC of dragging the women out in chains and shackles. We got the Supreme Court to say you can't secretly search pregnant women for evidence of drug use and turn that information over to the police. So what tends to be happening now is that they are turning the information over to DSS, and then DSS is turning it over to the police. Melissa Rowland gives birth to twins in Utah. Forgive me, Melissa, for this picture. This is after the C-section. She's in jail. One of the babies died. She's charged with homicide. Why? Because she refused to have a C-section 2 weeks earlier, and they said that was murder for not having had it sooner. This woman is arrested at a meth lab. She doesn't use an alleged meth lab. She's thrown in jail. Child welfare, the family court comes in and takes custody of her fetus and keeps her in jail for most of her pregnancy, where she almost loses the pregnancy because the conditions in jail are so horrific. Laura Pemberton, and I think I'll end here. This is where we see the anti-abortion and the birthing. Laura Pemberton wanted a home birth, wanted a vaginal birth after a C-section. 300 hospitals in this country won't even let women have a trial of labor. That's a combination of lack of respect for women and part of the larger politics. Not a single doctor in Florida will allow her to have a trial of labor. So she begins her labor at home. She becomes dehydrated. She goes to the hospital. She can't have a midwife either, because midwives are not legally allowed to attend what's considered a high-risk birth. So she's doing this on her own. She goes to the hospital. They will not give her IV fluids unless she agrees to a C-section. She refuses. The nurses say they're going to go do something to make you have a C-section. She flees without ever having gotten the fluid. She goes home. She continues in labor. When she is at 9.5 centimeters dilated, there's a knock on her door. It is the sheriff. They are there to take her into custody, to take her back to the hospital. She tries to delay so she can have her vaginal birth. They take her. They tie her down in the back of an ambulance with her legs strapped together while she's in active labor. They bring her to the hospital, and they force her to have a C-section. And when she sues saying, you have violated my civil rights, they say no civil rights were violated. They cite a misinterpretation of Roe, which says after viability, the fetus's rights are greater than yours. And they cite a physician who says he convincingly explained the risk of a uterine rupture in this circumstance was 4 to 6%. He said if an airline told prospective passengers there was a 4 to 6% chance of a fatal crash, nobody would get on board. So we have pregnant women as equivalent of airplanes. Pregnancy loss is between 15% and 25% of all pregnancies. How stupid are those fetuses? So let me just say, we have been able as a matter of precedent to win over and over and over again. In most of the 4 C-section cases where we're involved, courts have said you can't do this, you can't use existing law to arrest pregnant women, but this trend is growing. And in a context where our government says we value a culture of life, what we see over and over again is we don't value the women who give that life.